You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 25 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be celebrating the League Cup triumph over Manchester City, as well as looking back at 4 goals for Wayne Rooney against Hull. Cali Red is next in line for the third week of the CAF countdown, and Daily Star journo Carl Eldridge joins us on the line to preview Arsenal away this Sunday.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, welcome to episode 25 of the RedCafe.net podcast. It's me, Stephen Darwin, and I'm joined by Dan and Dov. Guys, should be an upbeat pod today, shouldn't it? Fantastic win in the Carling Cup. How are we?
I'm great, thanks, Steve. Yeah, buzzing after tonight's result. Just good to get another victory over City. And hopefully they'll all crawl back into the woodwork now, which will be even better.
Hey, Dan, City are a massive club. Biggest club in Manchester, apparently, as well.
Yeah, but well, they thought they were through to the final and after the first leg, and it's just good to put them down a bit, really.
Yeah, well, it was great. I'll love a little Carlos Tevez's face when Rooney scored. That was great.
Well, what better place to start, guys, than talking about the City game. Obviously through to the final now, Wembley final. And Dan, it doesn't really get much better than that, does it? Last minute winner against your biggest sort of City rivals. It's fantastic, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I thought the whole occasion was pretty special, and the atmosphere was good, and both fans played the part in that. And both teams were going for it, really. First half, I thought the game was pretty even. No one was really dominating, but second half, United stepped it up, and you know, they showed City what they're made of and where City need to be if they want to be winning trophies. I think it's mainly about winning mentality, and United had it and City didn't, really. But yeah, I thought it was a fascinating game to watch, and obviously brilliant at the end, because I thought it was going through to extra time, to be honest with you. But you know, Mr. Rooney popped up again. He's in some good form at the moment, and he's scoring vital goals.
And yeah, Dov, Rooney, I mean, he missed that sitter, didn't he? But then he can go on, such as the player that he is, and just go on and have such a massive impact on games, as he did tonight with the popping up with the winner and the fantastic pass over to Giggs as well that created the first goal.
Yeah, he really is. He's stepping up. I mean, after Ronaldo, we needed a guy that could step up to the plate and sort of be a player that the team could rally around, be sort of a key figure, and he's definitely coming up with that. I think he's on course to have his best ever season. And well, Dan, you might have to rethink your what shall we say, thoughts on Rooney later on, towards the end of the season.
I've said on many times, I'm not saying he's not a very good player, I've not said that at all, right? I just don't think he's, I mean, he flitted in and out of the game today, to be honest with you. I mean, the time, I think it, no, Steve, to be honest, he did. First half, he didn't. I don't remember anything that he did apart from give away a stupid foul.
He's on his own up front.
Well, so what? He should be, if he's world class, he plays that position. You know, second half, he was on his own up front, but he played better. So, you know, I don't know where your argument is there. I mean, I know it's not his fate. He'd rather play in a pair. But that's up to Ferguson, isn't it, really?
Did you not find it quite frustrating, though, in the first half, that they kept lumping long balls up to him?
Yeah, I noticed that, actually. I said, because I don't know why you would do that when you've got, obviously, Richards is at the back. He's 6 foot plus, isn't he? You've got the new guy, I forget his name, who said you've got, and obviously got Company as well. And it's like, well, why just boot it in the air to him? He's not really going to do much with it. And yeah, he did get frustrated. But I mean, he showed his class, you know, in the second half when it really mattered. Obviously, he missed that sitter that Steve's mum could have scored. We've already discussed this. But about, you know, that's, you know, good strikers bounce back. And I think he said in his after game interview as well that, you know, when he's got good players around him that are going to put deliveries in, he's always got that other chance to, you know, to make up for his bad misses, which is a luxury which you can have in a top team. And yeah, like you say, he's on his best season ever. So yeah, I hope he breaks 30 goals. I think he could actually get 30 goals this season. How much is he on now? 20, 21. You'd be surprised if he didn't score 10 goals between now and the end of the season, wouldn't you? So I think he's got every right to believe he's going to be bursting the 30 goal mark.
Yeah. What did you, Steve? I'm going to ask a question. What did you reckon of Nani's performance? He's getting a few games in the team, a good form. Yeah. I thought he was quite good tonight. What did you think?
Completely agree with you, Dov. I thought he was really good tonight. He seems to be more naturally suited to playing on the right-hand side as well. We got an email about that, which I'll discuss a little bit later on. But yeah, Nani, he just seems more natural, doesn't he, when he's on the right-hand side. And delivery was spot on again tonight. He put in a few absolutely superb crosses that we were unlucky not to score from. And he's just playing with a bit more confidence now as well. And it was great to see Ferguson actually showing that bit of faith in him. I mean, he played well against Hull. And then it's nice to see that Fergie's happy to put him into a big game. So, yeah, I was really pleased for him tonight. And hopefully that'll be the sort of start of the resurrection of Nani's career at Old Trafford. Yeah.
Steve, do you think, like, that... I know Harry Redknapp played David Bentley last night for Tottenham, like, to try and put him in the window, so to speak, before, you know, the deadline comes up. Do you think Ferguson's doing that with Nani? And he's just trying to be a bit cute with it?
Yeah, I see what you mean. But, no, I'm pretty confident now that at least to the end of the season, I think he'll keep Nani. I don't think he can really afford to sort of sell anyone at the moment. We obviously don't need the money, do we? Because Ferguson's we've got the Ronaldo cash to start with, and he's already made it clear that he doesn't really feel he needs to bring anyone in at the moment. So obviously got Obertan coming through. Valencia's made that right midfield slot his own, isn't he, at the moment? But I still think he's an asset to have around. He proved tonight that he's got ability when he shows it, when he wants to play. So, I think he's going to stay. And it's quite a contradiction to what we were saying a couple of weeks ago, saying that could be it for Nani's Old Trafford career. But...
Yeah, well, to be fair, like he was looking dead and buried. Mm. And it might have been, I don't know, injuries or whatever, that sort of gave him a chance, and he's taken it. And that'll maybe show a bit of character from the lad as well. And if he can basically open a new chapter as such, the resurrection, as you said, Steve, then he could go from strength to strength, because I think he's a top quality player. And if you give him a run of games, which has been proved so far, he can hurt teams.
And Dan, James McAllister sent in an email. He was a bit surprised at the 4-5-1 system. We mentioned it first half, it really didn't seem to work at all, did it? But then second half, I think the midfield trio came to life, didn't it? Carrick, Scholes and Fletcher. Obviously, Scholes and Carrick on the score sheet as well. And generally, those three, I thought, played pretty well, didn't they?
I thought Scholes was very good in midfield, actually. I thought he dictated it very well. He wasn't afforded a lot of space either. I mean, when we played against Liverpool at Anfield, he got a bit sort of pushed out of the game, didn't he? But I thought he had a really good game tonight, and his passing was superb all the way through. I can't remember giving the ball away that many times, but obviously that tackle he put in as well, which was ridiculous. I don't know why he was even what he was doing there, but you know that's always in Scholes' game, isn't it? But yeah, thought Scholes was very good. Carrick obviously getting the goal, he missed a chance as well, and Fletcher obviously getting man of the match. So it just shows that our midfield worked a bit harder than City's, and we were creating chances as well.
And well, we'll move on to briefly discuss the whole City game as well now, guys. Another really impressive victory, 4-0. Dov, four goals for Wayne Rooney. We talked about him scoring the winner in the City game, but that's 19 league goals for the season, and well, that's not bad for a player that supposedly can't finish, is what Dan was saying last week.
To be fair, I'm a little bit in agreement with Dan about his finishing ability, but to be four goals were absolutely fantastic. I'm going to hold my hands up. I didn't actually see the game because I wasn't in the country, but I've managed to see the goals and some of the highlights, and it looked like the keeper, Boaz Mihal, was rubbish. And from what I've seen, he just had a terrible game. I know we spoke about it with the Hull fan previously, who said if Mihal has a good game, then Hull could maybe get something, and if he has a bad game, it could be quite a rollicking from them, and that proved to be, because I thought he was pretty terrible. But Rooney, obviously, right place at the right time, and four goals, you can't complain. That's nearly a 10 out of 10 performance.
And Dan, you've talked about this in the past, and I don't think you can really understand why, but Ferguson suggested that the Rooney-Owen partnership, he doesn't think it works because they're two sort of very similar players. But it worked pretty well, didn't it, against Hull on the weekend?
Michael Owen played very well. I mean, I don't understand why people have a go at him, really. His link-up play has improved so much. He was dropping into midfield, picking the ball up. I actually looked up the stats because I'm sad, and I think he passed 24 balls and he completed 24. Didn't give the ball away once. You know, what more do you want from a striker who's linking up the play? Hmm. You know, I mean, he had a few chances that maybe he should have done better with. But I mean, I thought his overall game was very good, and Ferguson took him off, you know, at the wrong time, I thought, because just as Hull were getting tired, you know, Owen could get a few goals there, like Rooney did, you know, the last 10 minutes. But he brought Berbatov on, and just because Rooney scores three goals alongside Berbatov, everyone thinks that it's just because of that, and I don't think it was, really. So I thought Owen was a bit unfortunate in that respect, but I'm sure he'll get another chance and he'll do well again.
The return of Rio Ferdinand, that's not a bad game to come back in, is it, where you Hull are going to be on the back foot all the time. You're not really going to have to do a lot. You're not going to have to break your stride, really. And it was just a nice game for him to come back in.
Yeah, it certainly was. It was good to see him back. I know there's been a lot of speculation about how long he's going to be out for, but like I say, he's a top quality player. The ring rusty, to be honest, after tonight especially, I thought it looked a wee bit rusty. But as long as he can come back and stay back, I think that's the big thing. I don't want him coming back for maybe two or three games and then going away for another couple of months being injured again. I want him to be back and playing regularly and getting back to the levels that we know he can perform at.
And Dan, we've already talked at quite great length about Nani, but from the emails, we had a few people emailing, Sean Field, Safi and Ben Zaire, and in particular Nathan Hornsby. They were all sort of singing the praises of Nani for that performance against Hull, and as I mentioned earlier, Nathan suggested that this change in fortune could be because purely to the fact that he's being played on the right, because maybe on the left he's not quite as comfortable. Would you go along with that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's got more natural ability on his right hand side. I mean, the frustrating thing when Nani plays on the left is that he always looks to bring the ball back inside and cross it with his right foot, and although that can sometimes work, the defenders can read it. They know it's coming, but on the right-hand side, he can vary it up, really, if he wants. He can play it first time, he can take a touch on it, do a few tricks if he wants. He can play it back to the right back like he was doing today, so they can get across in. I think that his overall performance on the right-hand side is a lot better than the left. The only thing that you take away from that is the fact that his goal threat isn't as strong on the right-hand side, obviously, because he doesn't cut inside onto his left. But, I mean, if you want him to deliver balls, I mean, he set up the Rooney goal against Hull, the header, and you know, he came close to setting up a few goals tonight, so I think he's every right to, you know, be saying, you know, Fergie, play me on the right hand side. And I'm not sure Valencia would be too happy with that though, but you know, he's got a competition now, which is only good.
Yeah, Ferguson's certainly got a few options there. But just one other email before we do move on, guys. It's from Daniel Lang. He's mentioned that he'd love to see Laurent Blanc come in as Alex Ferguson's number two. Just sort of to eventually be able to be groomed and then take over as manager. He's admitted himself that that's very unlikely to happen. I mean, Blanc's doing superbly well with Bordeaux at the moment in the French league. But Dov, in a general sort of sense, I mean, would it be good to bring in a manager or an assistant manager, groom them underneath Ferguson, if you like, and then eventually be in a position to take over from him?
I would say no. I would rather a manager came in, sort of proved himself at various clubs, and then came in and stamped his sort of like his authority, his mark on the side. Because we see what happened with Busby. When Busby was in the background, it didn't really go very well. Managers were always living in the shadow of Sir Matt Busby, and I think that could well, it may happen again, and especially if you get a number two in or somebody shadow him for a little bit. I think it's more get somebody in who has their own ideas to then bring their sort of stamp onto the club and then take the club forward in that way. We're talking about Laurent Blanc as well. Apparently, he's actually got a deal with Inter where they've kind of got first refusal on his services after he leaves Bordeaux. But I think they've got an agreement. The president's had an agreement with them saying that he'll speak to Inter first before he speaks to any other teams, because I know he used to play there as well. So, I mean, that's interesting to see what would go on with that. Also, I know he wants the France job as well. That's a job he covets as well. So I think we would like a manager that's going to be there for the length of time Sir Alex has been. So yeah. I think maybe a couple of jobs out of the way first before it comes to United.
just really, really quickly, guys, both of you still edging towards Mourinho?
Yeah, I mean, I do like Mourinho, but I mean, I watched the Inter Milan AC Milan game at the weekend, and he just winds me up sometimes. just his actions on touchline. I mean, it's great, I suppose, if he's your manager, get your players and your fans riled up, which is only a good thing. But he just winds me up sometimes. Great manager though, so I mean, you couldn't complain if he came in. But, you know, we said this the other week. You know, it depends on circumstance really, and who's available at the right time.
Right, well, we'll move on to just look at a couple of news snippets before we move on to the CAF countdown, guys. Well, this one's sort of come out of the blue, hasn't it, really? Chris Smalling signing and joining at the end of the current campaign. Dan, any sort of reservations on the fact that, well, he was playing non-league football, wasn't he, for Maidstone a couple of years ago? Not too much known about him, but Roy Hodgson has come out and said that Ferguson really has spotted a real talent.
I mean, to be honest, Steve, I couldn't really tell you a great deal about him. It was news to me that we were gonna sign him, but you know, if Ferguson will have done all his homework on the guy, so will all the scouts and the coaches. So I mean, we spend a lot of money on him, aren't we? Is it something like 6 to 8 million, if something like that? It could total to, which is a lot of money, really, for, like you say, someone who played conference football only what, 2 years ago. He was in the crowd tonight, wasn't he? Actually signing autographs. So he's definitely done. The interesting point I'm quite wary of is the fact that, you know, we reportedly have no money, yet we're spending all this money on a centre half when we've already got Wes Brown, Johnny Evans, Ferdinand and Vidic. Does that mean that someone's leaving?
Can I cut in there right now?
When I
was in Turin at the weekend, and I was lucky enough that I sat next to a guy who used to scout for United, and he's a scout for another Premier League team, and he's told me that Vidic is going to leave in the summer. It's pretty much dead on, and apparently United scouts have been in Turin watching Giorgio Chiellini as well.
I've heard about the Chiellini rumours as well. I think he'd be a good signing.
Yeah, so I think Vidic, I think we've sort of been a bit sort of sus about it, that all the things that have been coming out with his agent and things like that, but I think it's pretty much nailed on, like, as far as I'm aware, and I've heard that he's definitely going to go to Spain, one of the big two there. So,
well, he'll only go if they've got replacements, won't he? Fergie's not stupid. He won't let anybody go unless he's got somebody to come in and do their job.
And then there's the replacement right there, John Evans as well. So I think he'll be saying goodbye to Nemanja at the end of the season.
Well, I really do like Johnny Evans. I think he had a good game tonight as well. I think he's stepping up. Last season he played really well when he was called upon. So I think it is the right time for him to come through, because you can't hold Johnny Evans back much more, really. You can't keep him on the bench all the time, because he's ready to be, you know, first-team material week in, week out.
Certainly is. And Dov, Zoran Tosic, he's another one to have been involved in some transfer activity over the last week or so. He's on his way to Cologne, however you prefer to pronounce it, in Germany, on loan until the summer. He's said, actually, that he's confident he's still got a future at the club, and that he wants to sort of go to Germany, prove he's still a decent player, and then hopefully get a chance under Ferguson once again. But I don't know, it's looking pretty ominous, isn't it, Dov, that he's probably not going to get much of a chance now in the first team at United.
I don't think so. I think if he has a good loan spell, then he'll come back. I think, to be fair, that's what he needs. He needs a good run of first-team games in a decent standard league. And the Bundesliga is a good league to play in. It's very like the Premier League as well. So if he can establish himself there, then I don't see any reason why he can't come back and do a job for us as well. Because we've seen the form that he's shown on the reserve. So if he can take that to Germany, then I would say that he's got a future. Only if he has a successful loan spell, though.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Tonight we are joined by RedCafe.net member, Callie Red, on tonight's CAF Countdown. How are you, and how did you watch the match tonight?
I'm fine, thanks. It was what a second half. first half was a bit boring, to be honest, but second half just came alight and just ecstatic. And I mean, that head at the last minute was just crazy.
Who did you think was going to be man of the match? Because Fletcher's been awarded it, but I thought that Nani had a good game again.
Nani was brilliant. I think Fletcher was probably man of the match, in my opinion.
Okay, well, you have 1 minute to answer as many questions as you can. The clock starts now. The sending off against which opponent cost Dennis Irwin the chance of an FA Cup final appearance in 1999?
Pass.
Who opened United's scoring away at Coventry in August 99?
Andy Cole.
How many top division titles did United win during the 1970s?
None.
How much were United paid when Andrej Kanchelskis left for Everton in 1995?
6 million.
Who gave Juventus a lead after 19 seconds at Old Trafford in the 1997 season, 98 season? Can answer that one. Got plenty of time. Juventus. Italian.
Inzaghi.
No, it was Del Piero.
Oh mate, that's dreadful.
No, you got one right. You got you got the top division titles in '70s. We didn't win any, and you got that one right. You're very close to the Kanchelskis one though. That
was it? Was
5.5 million.
Oh, I thought I'd first five, but yeah.
The first one, Dennis Irwin, FA Cup final, was against Liverpool at Anfield when he kicked the ball away.
Okay.
He got the second yellow. Tough one, this one. The Paul Scholes scored the opening goal away at Coventry in 99.
Oh, yeah,
I wouldn't have got that one, so that's fine.
I was just shot in the dark.
No. But I know, yeah, well, you got one.
That was tough. From what I've heard before, that was quite tough, I'm being honest.
Yeah, it's all random though, don't worry. No one's.
Yeah, all right. Not getting harder each week.
No, well, they shouldn't be doing anyway, but there you are.
All right, Lynn.
Well, great effort anyway, and I'm glad you're buzzing about tonight's result.
All right, cheers.
Well, it's time for some features now on the redcafe.net podcast, and it's Cavage and Player of the Week. Dov, start with you and pick out your Player of the Week. Been a pretty decent week for us, so plenty of players to choose from, surely.
Indeed there is. I'm going to give it to Nani, for the reason as he's been written off, his old Trafford career has been finished, and he's came back this week and been an integral part in the two victories in the last couple of days, so great performances as well, and hopefully we shall be seeing more of the young Portuguese winger in the future.
Dan?
No, I think I'm going to give it to Patrice Evra. I think that over the last two games he's been really solid. As he has, you know, in all the rest of the season. I think he's been our player of the year up to now. Could have given it to Rooney, but I'm going to go with Patrice Evra, I think. Steve?
I've got three in mind. I'm thinking either Paul Scholes, Nani, or the man that is Wayne Rooney. And I think I'm going to give it to Rooney off the back of Dan sort of saying he doesn't think he's world class. I think he's proved that he's world class. I think he's absolutely superb. Got the winner against City, 4 goals against Hull. Can't argue with that. Absolutely fantastic. And we'll move on to Cabbage of the Week now. And Dan, I'll start with you. Who's your Cabbage this week?
Rio Ferdinand. Stupid on Saturday to throw an elbow. No need to do it. And today as well, the Tevez goal. What was Ferdinand doing trying to head that ball there? He's got to be putting his foot through it. So yeah, Rio Ferdinand.
Dob?
I don't know, this is quite different. I'm tempted to give it to Gary Neville for antagonising Carlos Tevez. But other than that, I can't really think of anybody, though everybody's played reasonably well. Maybe actually, going back to the first leg of the Carling Cup, Raphael, he got torn to shreds. I'll give it to Raphael because he was rubbish in the first leg of the Carling Cup.
It is tricky, isn't it, this week? I think I'm going to give it to Johnny Evans, which I know is pretty harsh because I thought he played pretty well against City tonight. But against Hull, I think he was a tad off colour, which is really harsh because everyone played pretty well. But I'm being pushed to pick one, so Johnny Evans. Let's move on to reserves review now. And Dov, you're going to tell us about a terrific hat-trick for Mammy Diouf.
Indeed I am, Steve. It's the first game for 5 weeks for the reserves, so it's been a welcome return. I finally got something to do when I'm looking at the young players. And like you say, a great hat-trick for Diouf. They were playing Sunderland, and it was 4-0 the final score to United. Obviously, Diouf's performance was the most eye-catching thing about it. Just talk you through the goals first. First goal came with a long ball from Matty James, prompted hesitant defending. I think the Sunderland defender's name was David Brown. And basically, Diouf sort of managed to get the ball, nicked it away, and sort of accelerated into the box. Keeper came towards him, and he just chipped it inside the far post. So it was a great start for him as well. That was really sort of it for chances until just before the half-time whistle went, where James sort of hooked a pass, and it looked like it was going to go out, but Obertan, he like sprinted down the wing, slid down the side of the pitch, kept the ball in, and then sort of played the ball across where Diouf sort of smashed it into the net. So that was 2-0. Going into the break, and right after the break, it was 3-0. 3 minutes after the restart, Danny Welbeck took the ball down the left wing and then sort of crossed it into Diouf, who dummied it, and then got the ball back from Ollie Norwood, and then just sort of slipped it into the near post. It was a great finish, although it might have been offside, wink wink, nudge nudge. Although one other point as well, it did come off, it injured, apparently was knocked, so that's a bit worrying, but hopefully he's not injury prone like some United players seem to be. It took until 53 minutes for United keeper Ben Amos to actually make a save. It was Sunderland striker Roy O'Donovan's a deflected lob prompted it was a fantastic reaction save, sort of to be tipped over the bar by Ben Amos, who looks like he's going to be a bit better than another Ben that we know. that was good, wasn't it?
A bit harsh.
Ben Amos looks top notch, I'll tell you that much. Obertan again, he really caused problems with his pace. He nicked the ball this time and sort of ran down the right wing and gave the ball to Matty James, who played a through ball for Danny Welbeck, who raced on a goal, and then he was taken down inside the area. And then Sam Houston, he slotted home the penalty to make it 4-0. After that, Sunderland came into life. Amos was caught in action a couple of times, but managed to keep his clean sheet. And it was a good victory for Ole Solskjaer's side, and a good return to action for them. And obviously, Diouf's hat-trick, the highlight of a great performance. Also as well, Corey Evans, he was another one, really, really looking good in the middle of the park. Sort of broke down a lot of Sunderland chances as well, especially in the first half. So he deserves a lot of special mention too.
What do we make of Danny Welbeck going on loan to Preston? I think that's a good move for him. Needs experience, doesn't he? You know, and I think that Preston would be a good place for it.
I agree with you, Dan. I think in the Championship as well, it'll be a bit rough for him as well. So he might, you said he's slight before, so it might sort of force him to bulk up a little bit as well and sort of toughen up. So I think it's a good move, keeping it in the family as well. So.
Well, it's the time of the podcast for Dov's Legends profile now. And Dov, you've got Dwight York this week.
Dwight Eversley York, to give him his full name. He was born on the 3rd of November 1971 in Canaan in Trinidad and Tobago. Originally started off as a midfielder, but obviously went on to play as a striker, as we know very well. He gained a nickname during his career, which I quite like. He was known as the Smiling Assassin because, well, he scored a lot of goals and he smiled a lot as well. So there you go, a fitting nickname there. He was brought to England by Graham Taylor, who was at the time managing Aston Villa. It was in 1989. Basically, Villa went on a pre-season tour of the West Indies. Seen York play, was very impressed with his close control, his skill with the ball at his feet, and signed him in 1989. He eventually formed a great partnership with Savo Milosevic, and was part of the Villa side that won the 1996 League Cup. York and Savo Milosevic both scored in a 3-0 win over Leeds United in that final as well. Over the next few seasons, York became a prolific goal scorer in the league. He got 46 goals across three seasons, including a hat-trick against Newcastle and a fantastic chip against Arsenal, a chip penalty it was a great goal as well. We always like to see who the United players are going to be United players scoring against Arsenal. He played 9 seasons at Villa Park, but after the interest from Manchester United was revealed, he stated his desire to move. Aston Villa were really, they weren't wanting him to go, and they actually said we'll have Andy Cole in exchange for some money, which we're glad that never happened, because we all know the kind of partnership that was. It was a fantastic partnership. But during a game, the first game this season, and I believe it was at 1998, York played for Villa. He didn't play very well. In fact, he pretty much went in a self-imposed huff, because he was told by John Gregory he wasn't getting to leave. So after that game, obviously he didn't play well after the game. He basically went up to the Villa manager at the time, John Gregory, and just said he wanted to leave Aston Villa and join Manchester United. And Gregory actually said, famously at the time, he said, "If I had a gun, I would have shot him," after York handed in an official transfer request. Then he came to Manchester United, signed for a club record of £12.6 million. And that summer would also have been linked with Salas, Bastua, Patrick Kluivert. These were like sort of world-class striker names, obviously, who just had a good World Cup as well. And to sign Dwight York, some people thought, wait a minute, he's not exactly in the same bracket as them. But well, history was to prove all these people wrong. On his home debut against Charlton Athletic, he scored 2 goals. And that season he scored 29 in all competitions, especially in the Champions League. He scored in six of United of our 11 games. He scored against Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Juve. The goal I mentioned last week, the goal against Barcelona, it was in the 3-3 draw, where it was the York and Cole dummy pass bang goal. It was great. He was only 5'9", but he was a great player. Head in the ball, it's fantastic in there. Obviously, when you've got Beckham on the right wing swinging in crosses, you're going to score. And he got 2 against Inter Milan in the Champions League quarterfinals that season as well. But probably his legacy would be the partnership he formed with Andy Cole. They were great friends off the park, and they were great friends on the park, and they had a superb understanding on the pitch. And they were best of friends. There was an article actually Andy Cole wrote about Dwight York, and he says when he came, basically he says when they started playing together, Andy Cole, I said about Dwight York, he said it was like meeting a special woman and falling in love. Everything felt right. Whatever he did, I did the opposite. We never had a cross word. If I was upset with him or he with me, we'd look at each other and say, okay. So there you go. That's an article Andy Cole, so it was part of an article Andy Cole wrote about Dwight York. After obviously that great season where we won the treble, we won the league again the next season. York got 23 goals, and this was where he was at the top of his game. Andy Cole was then sold following season to make way for Ruud van Nistelrooy, and basically York maybe took a little bit of offence to this. He was a bit frustrated, started to find himself in some of the glossy magazines. We all know a bit of relationship with the glamour model / media hungry expletive person Jordan. Basically, there was a bit of a high profile relationship, and he started to gain a reputation for having a playboy lifestyle, which we know Alex Ferguson does not like. There's one thing he actually said, is that when after he had a falling out with Alex Ferguson, he actually said he started to drink quite a lot. He said, "I started to drink again. I wasn't alcoholic, but it helped to ease the loneliness. I felt like a zombie." But this was after he sort of exiled from the first team, not getting very many games. Another thing he'd done in the latter stage of his career, he netted a 21.5-minute hat-trick and a 6-1 thrashing of Arsenal, which was great. A great thing to see, a great thing to do. So there you go. Eventually, he was sold to Blackburn in 2002 to link up again with Andy Cole. But things didn't really go for him too well there. Obviously, had a few good games, but then had a little bit of a bust-up with Graeme Souness, who was in charge of Blackburn. Apparently, Graeme Souness wasn't happy that he was... He said he wasn't trying hard enough during a six-a-side game in training. so he only lasted a couple of years there. Then moved on to Birmingham, didn't really play too much at Birmingham, and was released after a season. Only played 13 games for Birmingham as well. He then went to play in Australia for Sydney FC, sorry, and this basically rejuvenated him as a player. Few eye-catching displays, and it was actually here he moved, but he dropped back into midfield, playing for Sydney FC. He was then brought back over to England by Roy Keane, who was managing Sunderland, and here he played in a centre midfield role. So he started off a right winger, played as a striker for most of his career, now he moved back into the centre midfield. So he had quite a varied career. Then eventually he was released by Sunderland in 1999, and late last year he announced his retirement as well. A couple of things. So we need to go into his international career as well. He played for Trinidad and Tobago. He was capped 72 times for the national side, scored 26 goals. He holds a record. The record number of participations in different World Cup competitions, including qualifying stages. So that was 1990, 94, 98, 2002, 2006, and 2010. Retired firstly in 2001 after a disagreement with the then coach. He returned for the 2006 qualifying campaign. Then he retired again in 2007, only to come out of retirement for the 2010 World Cup qualifying campaign. He's also been assistant manager for the national team as well. And he actually harbours ambitions to be a coach. He says, of his career, away from football, he says, my aim is to build up some experience and then use what I've learned from playing to one day manage a team in England. So who knows, potential manager there. Another couple of things, he also has a stadium named after him. It's called the Dwight Yorke Stadium, coincidentally. And it's in Bako in Tobago. And it was constructed there for the 2001 Under-17 World Cup, and obviously named in York's honour. Another thing I found out is older brother Clint York is a first-class cricketer, and he's actually represented Trinidad and Tobago as an opening batsman as well. And he's also a sports ambassador for Trinidad and Tobago as well. I need to finish on a quote from the man as well. Played the game the right way, always with a smile on his face, and that partnership with York and Cole was, for me, it's one of the best straight partnerships I mentioned last week that I've ever seen. But in his book, Born to Score, he says, making love and scoring a couple of goals, is there a better way to spend your time on the planet? So that's a question for you. Is there a better way to spend your time on the planet and doing that? So there you go. That is Dwight York.
You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net. Or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Well, it's preview time on the redcafe.net podcast, and I'm delighted to say we're being joined by Daily Star Sunday Sports Journo and Arsenal fan Carl Eldridge. Carl, thanks a lot for coming on the show today. And well, other than a disappointing result in the FA Cup against Stoke, it's been a pretty decent season so far for you guys, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, beginning of the season, the expectation wasn't there at all, was it? So, yeah, the Stoke game was disappointing because, you know, Wenger might not necessarily place the cup in the highest esteem, but, you know, we, as fans, we do. Nearly 5,000 of us went up to Stoke, and, you know, to get beaten by a bunch of clockers as we did is very disappointing in any competition. So, but, yeah, he gets the bigger picture in terms of the title and the Champions League is the bigger prizes, and that's what he wants to compete for. So, you know, far be it from me to disagree with a great man. But, the draw at Villa last night, you know what, I'd have taken that before the game because dropping points to Villa, we can handle on their patch. I think dropping points to United on Sunday or Chelsea or indeed Liverpool, who we've got coming up, is going to be twice as painful, obviously, because it's given our rivals, you know, more points in the fight for the title.
Okay, and with Sunday's game at the Emirates in mind, Carl, I mean, just how decisive do you think that's going to be in a general sense in terms of the title race?
I don't know because, you know, we fought the Chelsea defeat, the 3-0 thumping at the hands of our near neighbours was going to be, you know, defining in terms of basically the end of our assault on the title, we can call it that. Yeah. And it wasn't. It merely gave us a moving point to say, right, redouble your efforts and crack on, you know, and I can remember a couple of times over the last 10 years or so where, you know, we've gone to Chelsea, for instance, and beaten them, and they've won the title. We did it with United. We beat United a couple of seasons back, and they went on and won the title. So, it's going to be important. Psychologically, it's going to be very important. But you know what? Already, I'd take a draw already. I mean, it's not necessarily defeatist, but I'd take a draw, Sunday. The way that United have turned things around of late, especially Rooney. I mean, we've got Thomas Vermaelen out. Big Soul is back. Big being the operative word. And, you know, will he be able to contain Rooney? More to the point, will he be able to contain his... we won't say diving because we're obviously talking to the Man United public, but yeah, I still can't forget that Old Trafford incident. Sorry, can't get it out of my head. So it will be defining in some respects, but then if we go on a massive run afterwards, if we get beaten and go on a massive run, you know, and other teams drop points, I used to say it's a long, as George Graham used to say, it's a marathon, not a sprint. God bless him.
And Cesc Fabregas, Carl, I mean, for someone who watches Arsenal in the flesh quite a lot, I mean, just tell us, how good is he? And long term, are you confident of keeping him?
How good is he? Well, he's up there, isn't he? I mean, you know, he's the one player I think we've got who could get into any side in the world. He's just phenomenal. And, you know, he proves that week in, week out. And when he doesn't play, we're not as good a team. And I think the Villa game where he came on, scored two goals, just sort of summed him up. He's just getting better and better. Are we going to keep him? Not. I mean, you know, he's from Barcelona. He grew up as a Catalonian and supports Barcelona. We plucked him from their youth ranks, age 15, I think it was. So we've given him, you know, a nice start in his career. Well, very nice. And I wouldn't be surprised if he goes back to Barcelona sooner rather than later. And you know what? Good luck to him. If I was playing for Barcelona and Arsenal, and I had a chance of going to Arsenal, and I'm a lifelong Arsenal fan, I'd jump at the chance. So, realistically, I don't think we can hold on to him. It's just a matter of time. We can get the rest of this season and another season, and then he can make his dream move back to Barcelona. He'd go with my fond wishes, you know. Not like Frank Stapleton, something like that.
Yeah. OK, Carl, well, if... bit of a hypothetical question now. It's something we always ask our opposition fans that come on. I mean, if money was no object and... you could pick one Manchester United player to come along and sign up for Arsenal right now. I think I know what your answer is going to be, but who would it be?
Without a doubt, Gary Neville. The only reason I say that is that if he could hate Tottenham as much as he hates Liverpool, I would get Gary Neville to come and play down the cack pit that is White Hart Lane. And I wouldn't necessarily want him to play. He could just warm up and give him grief, but... being realistically, yeah, obviously, it goes without saying, we could do with that ginger-chested youngster you've got up front by the name of Wayne Rooney. I mean, he's just phenomenal, isn't he? You just got to take your hat off to him. To be fair, though, Giggs isn't a bad player either, is he?
No, he's just not bad, is he? He's having a bad season. And just finally, Carl, before we let you go, just give us a final prediction for Sunday. You said you'd take a draw, but... deep down, you'll be looking for the win, won't you?
Yeah, of course you are. You're a fan, and you go into games and you want to beat Man United. You know, it's the biggest home game of the season, despite what the other lot down the Seven Sisters Road tend to think. Okay, I'll go 2-1 Arsenal.
Okay, great stuff. Well, thanks a lot for coming on the show, Carl, and good luck for the weekend.
Yeah, best of British, and may the best team win.
Well, that was the view of our opposition fan for this week. Let's talk about the game ourselves now, guys. Dan, really is going to be tough, isn't it, going to the Emirates? They've only lost once there at home, obviously, this season. They've scored 34 goals as well. But victory over City and coming off the back of the 4-0 win over Hull as well, we'll be full of confidence, won't we?
Yeah, I think it'll be a very entertaining game. Arsenal, you know, obviously a good footballing team, but I think they drew 0-0 tonight with Villa. So they'll be out to get the 3 points because they've obviously, you know, dropped points tonight. I just hope we approach the game in the right way, i.e. play 4-4-2. I know that obviously being away from home we need to, you know, be a bit more alert defensively, but we play our best football when it's 4-4-2. Proved that against Wigan, proved it against Hull, and obviously tonight when we went to 4-5-1 and at Eastlands as well, we didn't really We didn't have that cutting edge, so to speak. I mean, tonight we did in the second half, but we just looked so much better at 4-4-2. Everyone seems to know where they're playing and where the movement is and how to link up with people. And I'd love to see that, but I don't think Fergie will do it because he'll be too worried about Fabregas.
I agree with you, Dan. I think we're going to go 4-5-1 because you look at the attacking threats they've got from all over the place. You've got Arshavin, Fabregas, even someone like Diaby pushes on and creates for him now. So that would be my next sort of question, Dov. I mean, how do you go about stopping Cesc Fabregas? How do you deal with him? Do you man mark him? Do you put someone like Fletcher just to sit on him? Or do you just go out there and ignore the threat of Fabregas and try and play to your own strengths?
Steve, I think we all know the answer. There's a song and it's about a man called Anderson. I think that's the man to stop Fabregas. I think, in all seriousness, I think if you have a three-man midfield, Carrick, Fletcher and Anderson would be my preferred choice. I think the way Arsenal, I think as midfielders go, I think if we have them, we'll have a stronger centre midfield than Arsenal. I mean, you don't mind mark Fabregas, you don't mind mark anybody. You just try and, I'll try and keep on top of him. Maybe I'll have Fletcher, like, as soon as he gets the ball, to get right on top of him straight away, something along those lines. But Fabregas is a top quality player, and if he wants to play, then you're going to have a tough task stopping him.
Okay, and what about some predictions then? Full of confidence, are we?
Yeah, I think we'll. I don't think we'll get beaten. You know, we need to maintain our good run of form as well. And obviously, Arsenal are still in there, you know, challenging for the title. So, if we were to win as well, that'd be a bonus. But I think right now I would take a draw if it was offered to me. But obviously, want to go there to win the game.
I think as well, I'm quite optimistic about this. Apparently Vermaelen's broken his leg tonight as well, and
I read that. And I think we can get in and around Saul Campbell, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Like Vermaelen's been massive for him. Also, I was like, they got beat off Stoke at the weekend, and I was like, that's an FA Cup. And do you remember, two years ago when they played us in the FA Cup and fielded a weak inside and got absolutely trounced, and then I think they went, I was at four draws and a defeat in the next five games, and that really that screwed their season up, to be honest. And well, they've got their defeat in FA Cup, draw against Aston Villa, then they've got to play us. Could well be the wheels coming off Arsenal's season in the next few weeks. So I'm quite confident in this one, actually.
Well, unfortunately, we're running out of time for this week's RedCafe.net podcast, but do remember to send any questions, feedback or comments to our email address, which is podcast@redcafe.net. Please do join us on the Facebook group too, if you haven't already done so. That just leaves us all to say thanks a lot for listening and stay tuned for episode 26 next week.